Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Yesterday, a huge announcement out of the Board of Governors of the NCAA meeting at Emory University in Atlanta. They directed each of the three divisions of the NCAA to create new rules that would allow college athletes to benefit from their fame, essentially the use of their name, image, and likeness. Now, that's very similar to a California bill that was passed and signed into law about a month ago by Governor Gavin Newsom. That bill had set up what was expected to be a head-to-head legal and even scheduling fight between the NCAA and California, the regulatory body for college athletics. It even threatened to pull games out of California because of the new law. Now it appears that the organization is taking steps to comply with the law on a national basis. Joining me is Wall Street Journal reporter Louise Radnofsky. Louise, what have you been able to glean about the behind-the-scenes debate on this from the board?
Well, thanks so much for having me. I think the most important and most newsy thing is that this is a really surprising reversal of public position from NCAA. There's a lot of issues and details that still need to be worked out. It's not clear that this will go as far as a state like California wants it to go, and California may, as a result, push ahead with its legislation anyway. I spoke to the sponsor of that legislation yesterday, and she told us that anything that places a limit on a college athlete's ability to earn money is unacceptable to her. That said, as you noted, as recently as a month ago, the NCAA was threatening not just to bar games from taking place in California, but bar California schools' athletes from participating. And they've now essentially adopted the same basic principle that, California had, that, if every college athlete or every college student can earn money off their talents except for the college athletes, maybe something needs to change for the college athletes.
Nancy Skinner, by the way, is the state senator from the Berkeley area who was the author of this bill, been on the program to speak in favor of it. And understandably, there's cautious enthusiasm in California, in the legislature for this. But as Louise Radnofsky of the Wall Street Journal just detailed, it's a little unclear what the daylight is between the state bill and what the NCAA is agreeing. And Louise, where are the areas is where it appears there may be some distance between them?
Well, we'll still be waiting on the details from the NCAA, but two things that they said yesterday should serve as a bit of a cautionary tale. They said that they wanted to protect the recruiting environment and that any profits from name, image, and likeness would have to take place within the collegiate model. Now, obviously, that rules out direct compensation for performance or participation, but it may also come into play over certain issues that have to be worked out. One of the issues that is of concern to the NCAA is the idea that there could be what they sometimes refer to as masked bounties, where a school booster offers a sponsorship deal largely as a recruiting incentive for an athlete to come there.
I was going to say this could be a huge benefit to California schools because of the major media markets of L.A. Orange County and of the Bay Area. And you could have boosters who would be, you know, putting significant money up to have new recruited athletes doing ads for their businesses. You've got significant money that those college athletes could make from advertising in those major markets. I mean, this seemed a potential boon for athletes, and there would be a strong incentive, Louise, for them to go to big market colleges.
That's a good point. I mean, one of the interesting things that had arisen initially from California moving ahead of the rest of the country, as it so often does, is a tool of sort of pushing change in the other 49 states. It wasn't clear for a while whether this would be a recruiting boost or a problem for California if coaches couldn't tell students for sure that they would be allowed to participate in the NCAA. Clearly, that issue is at least off the table for now. And with your point about the major media markets, there's certainly particular areas of interest. I mean, that said, we talk a lot about certain athletes, about football players and basketball players as the face of this. Another California athlete who's been very vocal on this is the gymnast Caitlin Ohashi. She had a viral floor exercise in her last year competing for UCLA. She wasn't able to monetize her YouTube channel to get those kind of clicks. Now, that obviously is not specific to her being in California, but it is a really good example of the kind of athlete you don't necessarily think of as a prospective beneficiary of this.
Yeah.
UCLA will continue to do those floor routines for a while, is my guess.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Although I would think those cases are rarer than ones where you have athletes who come in with, you know, a reputation from high school, heavily recruited, who right away could get ads potentially in major markets and build their brand right out of the gate at schools like UCLA or Stanford or USC. With us, Louise Radnofsky, who is sports reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Also with us, professor of economics at Smith College, author of the book Unwinding Madness, What Went Wrong with College Sports and How to Fix It. Andrew Zimbalist, professor, always a pleasure to have you with us. How is the NCAA going to be able, or will it be able, to deal with what appears to be a built-in advantage here for big market schools?
Okay, so first of all, as Louise pointed out, they stipulated very clearly yesterday that any benefit, they didn't say compensation benefit, going to an athlete has to be consistent with the collegiate model. The collegiate model idea, as it's currently been defined by the courts in the Ninth Circuit, says that any benefits have to be tethered to education. So it's quite possible when the NCAA finally comes out with rules about nil benefits, that they will stipulate that the benefits have to be tethered to education, i.e., they might be saying that, fine, we'll give such and such an athlete a benefit for his or her nils, but it has to come in the form of a computer, or it comes in the form of paying part of your graduate school tuition. We don't know what's going to happen. And so there's a great big question mark. The NCAA has taken a very small step here, Larry. They've come under not only the pressure from the California state bill, but there are 10 other states considering bills. And there are two bills that are about to drop that they know about in the National Congress. They also have a variety of legal suits out there that are pressuring them. So basically what the NCAA is saying here is, hey, we're good guys. We get it. We can modernize. And what they're trying to do is puncture a hole in the balloon of political pressure. So let's everybody sit tight. And is it Nancy Skinner who introduced?
Yes, yeah.
California? She says she's going to stay vigilant. And that's very, very important here.
Well, and I was going to say, though, if really these are only educational benefits and the kinds of things you're talking about, graduate education, computers, things that would, fuel educational purposes, there's so much distance between that and what California's bill is attempting to do. I don't see how this would forestall the legal showdown with California's bill. Would it, Professor?
That's right, and also various federal initiatives, federal bills that are about to be dropped in Congress. You asked the question about recruiting advantages. The NCAA has already stipulated that whatever they introduce is not going, at least it's going to try not to allow there to be recruiting advantages. So probably there'll be, whether the benefits are actually an educational coin or the benefits are in cash, they're going to probably stipulate that it can only be a certain amount of money, and they'll probably have a national commission that oversees any NIL deals over a certain amount.
Neil, we should just mention his name, image, and likeness.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of the legal issues, we're joined by attorney Greg Clifton, who is co-chair of his firm, Jackson Lewis, their Phoenix office, their national sports practice. Greg Clifton, thank you so much for being with us. Do you think this is still inevitably going to end up in court?
I think as you listen to Louise and Professor Zimbalist's comments, which are both exactly on point, I think it's unavoidable that this is going to end up in court because, as Professor Zimbalist just was discussing, I call the effort by the NCAA yesterday as a real beginning and really in an effort to forestall some of the momentum that had been building among the various states that have been introducing legislation and, as he mentioned, some of the potential federal legislation. What they did was, in the policy announcement they made, they bought time until January 1 of 2021. A lot of the bills that have been introduced have an effective date, as in California, of January of 2023. And I don't know if it was Louise or the professor who mentioned about we're really good guys. I think that's what they were trying to do. They're trying to hold this in abeyance and say, hey, listen, give us a chance. Don't overreact. We don't need all this state legislation. Give us a chance and let us see what we're going to do. But I think the multiple bullet points that they had in their policy announcement yesterday are really a foreshadowing of what we're going to see, which is not going to be in any way, shape, or form equal to the only state that has a current law right now, which is California, and a number of the state legislations. I mean, New York State right now, the proposed legislation contains a 15% revenue distribution of ticket sales to student athletes at the end of every academic year. Clearly, that is not what the NCAA is going to be proposing. And as the professor said, I'm sure the NCAA is going to have some type of a cap or restriction or limitation tied back to education, which is clearly not what someone like Zion Williamson or some of these other fabulous student athletes would be able to secure based upon their athletic stature from some of these companies while they are an undergrad.
So you mentioned that the bullet points included in the Board of Governors of the NCAA's release yesterday, and there are several of them that are here. One of them is, and I think Andrew Zimbel has mentioned this, protect the recruiting environment and prohibit inducements to select, remain at, or transfer to a specific institution. Greg Clifton, how can they do that? What if you're going to allow athletes to be able to financially benefit from what they do, I don't see how you could police that.
I agree with you. And I think if you look at a few of these other bullet points, they are set up for litigation. One of the other ones, assure student athletes are treated similarly to non-student athletes unless a compelling reason exists to differentiate. That sounds good. I'm sure the four of us on this, five of us on this call right now, would each have different interpretations of what that means. And when I see wording like that, I say, okay, that's a lawyer's dream, because that just sets things up for potential litigation to understand and decide what is a compelling reason and how is that going to be interpreted. So again, it's a nice step. It's a nice PR move. Takes the pressure off the NCAA to a certain degree. But unfortunately, for a number of the schools that are potentially going to be dealing with these various state legislation and the legislators that are making these efforts in these various states, this does not help them. It doesn't bring closure. What it does is that now we're going to have various Division I, Division II, Division III bylaw amendments and changes that are going to be attempt to be consistent with this policy introduction by the NCAA. But some of these schools are still going to be dealing with the ramifications of proposed state laws that might be in direct conflict with the proposals that are being made or will be made at the Division I, Division II, and Division III levels by the NCAA.
We're talking with Greg Clifton, an attorney who practices in Phoenix at the firm Jackson Lewis's office there. He co-chairs the firm's national sports practice. Also with us, athletic director at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, Craig Pintons. He was the senior associate athletic director for 7 years at the University of Oregon. Mr. Pintons, thank you very much for being with us. What is the potential effect of what the NCAA Board of Governors is talking about for a school like the University of Oregon, LMU? I know it doesn't have a football team, although you've had a basketball team that over the years has had some success.
Well, I think it is a very complicated issue. As everybody has alluded to, there is kind of a runway right now to January of 2021. And what will come about in the coming year to what the extent of that will really determine what the value is. And, you know, I think the thing that might get lost a little bit in this is it's not just football and men's basketball, which is what the media tends to cover quite extensively. But you're also talking about opportunities for students who have influencer on Instagram. You know, we have student athletes here who have a pretty large following on some of the social media channels, and they're not able to capitalize like other students are on our campus. And so I think that's the part that gets a little bit lost in this discussion is people are focusing on the Zion Williamsons and the star athletes across the country. And there's only a handful of those in any given year that have a tremendous amount of value, but there's a lot of students across the country that compete in college athletics that would have potential to benefit from.
So these would be swimmers, gymnasts, soccer players, who we don't think of as necessarily, you know, being part of pizza national advertising campaigns, but through social media could make some significant revenue?
There has been instances of that. If you look, there was a kicker at UCF who had a YouTube channel, which was extremely popular, and was not able to capitalize on that and had to make the decision to either not profit from his YouTube channel or remain on the team at UCF. And so there has been instances like that where this is hopefully an attempt to rectify some of those type of situations, in addition to obviously the opportunities that some of the more elite and star athletes have. And again, I do have a unique perspective, having been at a place like the University of Oregon, was also at LSU for a couple years. And in any given year, we had a couple of very elite athletes who were pretty recognizable across the country. And so, again, I think it is a complicated issue, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right. I want to thank you all so much, again, this very early, because yesterday there was just the release coming out of the Board of Governors meeting of the NCAA, making this move towards allowing players to be able to profit from their name, image, and likeness, from their fame or their popularity. And we'll continue, of course, to closely follow the story. My thanks to Craig Pintant, athletic director at LMU in Westchester, Greg Clifton, Louise Radnofsky at the Wall Street Journal, Andrew Zimbalist, Smith College economist. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Coming right up, we're going to talk about yesterday's ride-hailing changes at LAX. First, a live update from Julie Slater.